Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's just one moment. Just one little moment. One little moment in your life when you look back and say, that was stupid. And it may last a literal moment. It may be just a move you made that turns out to be misconstrued. In any case, it's not the theme of today's show. The program doesn't have a theme. That's why I'm talking already. But it will sort of be the template for the musical selections, which themselves will constitute kind of a rebus puzzle of what I'm actually talking about. And those of you who solve it, two things will know. A, you're not listening to the podcast where the music is truncated, and B, you're paying way too much attention to TMZ. It's probably been outside the bubble. The fact that days after President Obama held a nuclear non-proliferation nuclear security conference in Washington, and banded a bunch of nations together to say, "Hey, let's back off on this whole nuclear thing." A similar conference with a similar agenda was held in Tehran, summoned by President Ahmadinejad. So we had the spectacle of my nuclear non-proliferation security conference is cleaner than your non-proliferation. So now we get to pick. And that's the way we should compete, everybody. You know, whose nuclear non-proliferation conference is cooler and better? That's how, don't fight. The quote of the day comes from John McCain on one of the Sunday morning Yak shows, who observed, apropos of the still problematic state of the American economy, "Half the homes in Arizona are underwater, which means we've changed the climate more than I knew." Man, people used to move there for the dryness. And I don't know if you've noticed, but Al Sharpton is getting invited to more and more kind of serious discussions. And in case you, like I, wondered why would that be, came the explanation this week from somebody, I think, on his staff, who said, well, it's, he no longer shows up in the track suits and gold chains. He's now wearing the three-piece suits with the silk ties. He's gone, in the words of this staff member, from the streets to the suites. So that's exactly how superficial we are. We think he's a more serious person because he's wearing suits. Ladies and gentlemen, the digital wonderland beckons. In case you've been wondering whether you should get an HD radio for your car, this is the game changer right here. Clear Channel, and they're such good people anyway, plans to introduce a news crawl. The service Total Traffic Network already broadcasts traffic reports to 125 metropolitan areas, but this text-only service comes over an FM sub-channel. It will work with any car that gets HD radio broadcasts. But right now, only one car stereo system is compatible, with a sticker price of $1,200. Clear Channel plans to launch the service later this year. It'll offer local news, weather, sports, and traffic info, although it's unclear, according to the Miami Herald, why Clear Channel thinks drivers would rather have this service than just listen to normal radio, especially since it means taking your eye off the road while driving. Well, they do own billboards, too, Miami Herald. How do you think they make money? I think Clear Channel is in the "don't watch the wheel, watch this" business. Anyway, the digital wonderland beckons with a news crawl on your radio. Watch this. Hello, welcome to the show.
until you came, he was a clown. Not, no laughing, no talking, the king was slowly walking. I've waited for the day to come since the day you left. Now I was just an ordinary guy.
I couldn't please myself.
Nothing was right.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, from the traditional, legacy, classic Le Show Dome. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of Le Show. Yeah, I blame the tracksuit. That was what was doing all of it. Ladies and gentlemen, now it's time for, won't you, News of the Warm. Ouch.
Soft, listen to the warm.
The warm hit me. British plants are flowering earlier now than at any time in the last 250 years, according to new analysis. Researchers, these are we're talking about flora plants, because there are no manufacturing plants in Britain anymore. Writing in the journal Proceedings B, researchers stitched together nearly 400,000 first flowering records covering 405 species across the nation. They show the average first flowering date has been earlier in the last 25 years than in any earlier period. Flowering dates are closely linked to temperatures recorded in the Central England Temperature Record. This is the longest continuous instrumental record of temperatures anywhere in the world, dating back to 1659. We've been able to use data from all sites from anyone who's ever recorded a first flowering date, says one of the researchers. During the 1980s and 90s, the temperatures that registered rose by about 1 degree centigrade, although there is large variability from year to year. There is a strong correlation between the flowering index and temperature, so what you see is in large part a reflection of the Central England temperature record, said Richard Smithers, one of the researchers. Smithers? I'm sorry, sir. I own that name. There have been other periods in the record when temperatures were warm, but in the last 25 years is certainly the period when the index has been earliest. You know what he means, but he have way with words. Across the planet, record researchers found that a temperature difference between 2 years of 1 degree centigrade equates to a difference in flowering time of about 5 days. Some species respond much more than others. I know the feeling. In general, spring flowering species respond more to temperature changes than those blossoming in other seasons. This is far from being the first study to look at how climatic changes are affecting timings of events in the natural world. The discipline known as, what is phenology? Researchers have investigated such phenomena as the appearance of blossom, the emergence of insects, and the hatching of birds. Birds. Glacier National Park has lost two more of its glaciers. Any suggestions for new names? Pothole National Park. The reason, apparently, is climate change, shrinking the rivers of ice until they grind to a halt, according to a government researcher this week. Warmer temperatures have reduced the number of named glaciers in the northwestern Montana park to 25, said an ecologist with the U.S. Geological Survey. He warned that many of the rest of the glaciers may be gone by the end of the decade. Well, we got 9+ years, babe. Relax. Have some iced tea. It's continual, the ecologist Don Fagre said. When we're measuring glacier margins, by the time we go home, the glacier is already smaller than what we've measured. Well, don't go home. The melt-off shows the climate is changing, but does not show exactly what is causing temperatures to go up, he said. The park's glaciers have been slowly melting since about 1850, when the centuries-long Little Ice Age ended. They once numbered as many as 150, and 37 of those glaciers eventually were named. A glacier needs to be 25 acres to qualify for the title. However, if for any reason it cannot assume the responsibilities of the title, the runner-up will, if it shrinks any smaller, it does not always stop moving right away. A smaller mass of ice on a steep slope would still continue to grind its way through the Rockies. Glacier National Park, over the past century, its mean summer temperature has risen by about 3 degrees Fahrenheit. And in the second of three investigations of the scandal known as Climategate, when, ladies and gentlemen, when will the gate thing finally have run its course as a linguistic habit? Or are we destined one day, when a scandalmonger is found to have defrauded the public, to witness the spectacle of Gate? Anyway, in the second of three investigations of the scandal known as Climategate, a panel of academic experts said this week that several prominent climate scientists did not engage in deliberate malpractice, but did not use the best statistical tools available to produce their findings. Right tool for the job. The University of East Anglia's climatic research unit has been under intense scrutiny since last November when hackers posted more than those 1,000 pirated emails and a raft of other documents that highlight the scientists' hostility toward global warming skeptics. But this review, which follows a British parliamentary review that defended the institution's research but faulted its tendency to withhold information, interviewed staff members and analyzed 11 peer-reviewed articles published between 1986 and 2008, and the panel concluded, "We saw no evidence of any deliberate scientific malpractice in any of the work of the climatic research unit. And had it been there, we believe it is likely we would have detected it." It's very surprising, they added, that the researchers did not work more closely with statisticians. Yeah. Have you ever worked closely with statisticians? But they added it was not clear that better methods would have produced significantly different results. Myron Ebell, director of policy at the Washington, D.C.-based Competitive Enterprise Institute, guess who funds that, called it a superficial investigation. They don't even make a minimal effort to rebut the obvious appearance of widespread data manipulation, suppression of dissenting research through improper means, and intentional avoidance of complying with freedom of information requests, says Ebell, whose think tank accepts funding from energy companies. The review panel was set up and funded by the University of East Anglia, headed by a geologist and former academic who is the honorary president of the Carbon Capture and Storage Association, is involved with a wind energy company. You know, I look around and nobody's in the Clean Hands Club these days. A third review, headed by a former civil servant, is expected to report back shortly on allegations of malpractice. News of the warm, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Hey, it's clean, it's safe, it's cheap, it's too clean to meter. It's nuclear power. It's coming our way. Federal regulators said this week that Entergy Nuclear had failed to complete expected but voluntary industry-recommended actions to prevent those tritium leaks or other radioactive problems at the Vermont Yankee nuclear reactor. A reactor much in the news for its leaks. But, you know, it's in the news. In a so-called quick look letter assessing Entergy Nuclear's response to the now-stopped tritium leak, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission noted that three monitoring wells that Entergy installed as a part of an industry regulation helped identify its leak. The NRC pointed out the leak did not contaminate any drinking water and did not pose a threat to public health. It's just tritium in the water. It's nice. Have some. No, don't have some. The letter comes just before the NRC holds an open house and public meeting regarding the tritium leak and Entergy's response. I would be there, but I have to not be there. According to the NRC, while the monitoring wells were key in the identification of the groundwater contamination, some voluntary aspects of the industry's groundwater protection initiatives had not been undertaken or completed. They included enhancements of existing leak detection methods, enhancements to prevent spills or leaks from reaching the groundwater, and preventive maintenance of equipment to prevent the potential release of radioactive material. Those are the things they didn't do yet. Spokesman for Entergy Nuclear said the company agreed with NRC's assessment. We could have done better, said the spokesman. We've taken their comments to heart, he added. Can a company take comments to heart? I know companies have First Amendment rights, corporations have First Amendment rights, but do they have hearts? Can they have heart transplants? Do they have the first call on organs? A senior director at the Radiation and Nuclear Safety Authority of Finland has expressed concern at current enthusiasm for nuclear power. Tero Vajaranta, director for Nuclear Waste and Material Regulation, singles out in particular new nations joining the nuclear power fraternity. You know, knowing how fraternities act, I think you might want to use a better word. Community. The nuclear power fraternity. Hey, it's Hell Week at the nuclear power fraternity. You think you've seen leaks before. Vajaranta will soon join the IAEA, responsible for material regulation and nuclear waste. About 50 nuclear power plants are under construction around the world, with 100 more on the drawing board. That's the best place for them, I think. I don't consider the renaissance of nuclear energy as a positive step. If it is used, then it must be utilized responsibly, he says. Suggesting you don't. It is an unfortunate favorable trend that many new, almost developing nations want to construct nuclear power plants. In my view, there are many risks involved, he says. Finland is soon to decide on granting licenses for new nuclear plants. Construction of the country's third reactor is faltering and remains behind schedule. The first, it is, of the new breed of reactor in the world. Vajaranta believes it to be safer than older reactors in many ways. But they're safe, right? I mean, this is safer, but they're safer than safe. It can withstand the impact even of a large passenger jet, and in the event of an accident, the heart of the reactor should melt and freeze within the plant itself. It melts, then freezes. And more than half of the homes in the desert are underwater. You see where this is going? Vajaranta adds questions remain, particularly with regard to the function of digital operation systems in the event of an accident. Well, there's a phrase I'd like to know more about. Is he talking about fingers? Or is he talking about something else? We'll await further developments. And now, ladies and gentlemen, News of the Olympic Movement. A senior scientist has told the BBC he has fled Russia to avoid arrest after warning of a possible disaster at the next Winter Olympics. The games are due to be held in the southern Russian city of Sochi in 2014. Dr. Sergei Volkov, a former consultant to the Sochi Winter Olympics, is in hiding in southern Ukraine because he fears being detained by Russian authorities on trumped-up criminal charges. He refused to keep quiet, he says, after discovering that the massive construction program for the Olympics is forging ahead without essential research into the region's complex geology. It is a potentially dangerous area, says Dr. Volkov, a geologist by profession. So how would he know? He gave an interview to the BBC in a small room where he now lives with just a laptop and internet connection and a few books and files. There have been big landslides in the past, and there are large deposits of mercury, uranium, and other potentially dangerous minerals. But all scientific advice is being ignored, he says. He says the government took the political decision to hold the games before they'd thought through how much preliminary work was needed in the area. Shortly after arriving in Ukraine, Volkov wrote an open letter to Russian President Dmitry Medvedev, warning him of the dangers. He sent the letter after a storm destroyed a new cargo port being built in Sochi for the Olympics. Not a particularly strong storm destroyed this important infrastructure project, he wrote. Well, maybe the Corps of Engineers built it. At least $14 million worth of work was washed away by the sea, to say nothing of the lives of three seamen. And this serious catastrophe with the loss of human life is just the start of similar accidents which will follow, he warned. What happened at the port is evidence Dr. Volkov believes of his worst fears coming true. He says building work began last year without basic research into local geology and weather patterns. He had warned it was not a suitable place for a port. But any storm in a port. Now one of his biggest concerns is an $8 billion project for a new road and rail link between Olympic venues being built on the Black Sea coast. It's supposed to be a centerpiece of the infrastructure development. Pile drivers, cranes, and bulldozers are transforming a long, beautiful valley into a frenetic industrial landscape. It's one of the main reasons the Worldwide Fund for Nature warned in February that preparation for the Olympics is out of control, construction is of poor quality, and vast damage to the environment has already been done. Says Sergei, Dr. Volkov's main worry is not for the environment. He fears the builders are cutting a swath through the valley up towards the mountains without taking into account how unstable the region is geographically. A massive landslide occurred there in the 1960s. He warns there could be a repeat. The road is being built and tunnels dug in this same district. He says this is seriously affecting the mountains. I pray to God, he says, there will not be any consequences. The only thing we can do is pray and hope. When the IOC awarded the games to Russia, he says they knew full well Russia did not have enough time to do proper research and build all the facilities in line with international environmental and construction standards. The IOC dismisses these concerns. The Olympics. It's a movement, and everybody needs one. Every day.
Some massive little girl, and then you know you better make up. up your mind and pick up on one and leave the other behind. It's not often easy and not often kind. Did you ever have to make up your mind?
From CPR, Continental Public Radio, this is Up to Here. Up to Here, a daily once-over not-so-lately on the story at the top of what's behind today's news. I'm Milton Getzler, sitting in for Alegria Del Fuego Godoy, who's on assignment. No two words sum up the current American political scene better than Tea Party. From the angry rallies last August against the health care plan, the Tea Party movement has grown into a large and growing movement, a series of meetings, marches, and at least one convention. There have been several different organizations springing up under the name, including Tea Party Patriots, the Tea Party Express, the Tea Party Revolution, and in Florida, Tea by the Sea. A leader of a relatively new organization in the movement is with us today to get us up to here. James Claypool is chairman of the original Tea Party organization, or OTPO. Mr. Claypool, welcome to Up to Here.
Well, we don't trust or respect the mainstream media, Mr. Getzler, but it's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I imagine that's more than we could have hoped for, Mr. Claypool. Would it be correct to call your organization a splinter group from the main Tea Party movement?
No, it would not, but you go right ahead and slap that label on us if it pleases your paymaster.
Well, for the moment at least, we'll call it what you'd like us to call it.
We are constitutionalists, not compromisers. We believe in reading first documents literally. Whether it's God in the Bible or the founders in the Constitution, we believe they meant what they said. If you understand the progressive movement, you understand that interpretation is a Marxist tool. So in terms of the political side of our movement, if it isn't in the Constitution, it wasn't put in there for a very good reason. Don't you be interpreting it in there, whether you're a Supreme Court justice or a pundit on TV.
Sounds quite fundamentalist.
Well, I know you intend that to be a slur, Mr. Getzler, but I'll accept that label happily. We do need to go back to fundamentals. What is it you hear whenever a professional athletic team is having a losing streak? The coach says, quote, "In our practices, we're going back to the fundamentals." Mm-hmm. You don't hear most coaches being called fundamentalists, unquote.
But that would suggest, by your logic, would it not, that sports reporters have different paymasters from news people?
If that premise wasn't to where I spoke it and what I just said, it would not be suggested. It wasn't suggested. And if it was suggested, it would be moot.
You took issue with the health care reform and the bank bailouts.
And with the level of taxation and government meddling in our lives. We've lost so many of our freedoms already, and the plan is just in its early stages of being carried out.
What freedoms exactly have you lost?
Are you kidding? The government not only is now telling me I have to buy health insurance, they're telling me there are certain cars I cannot buy.
Such as?
All those Toyota models they pulled off the market. All that hamburger meat, too.
Well, they were unsafe, according to the government.
Mm-hmm. And tomorrow they could decide that this program's unsafe.
So you oppose all safety regulation by the federal government?
You can look in the Constitution until the cows are blue in the face, and you will not find the word safety mentioned once in there, not one time. I will pay $10,000 cash money. Anybody can find the word safety in the United States Constitution.
So you would have, going back to perhaps the first product recall of the modern era, you would have fought for the right to purchase Bon Vivant canned vichyssoise contaminated with botulism?
Well, I question whether any American would choose to buy a product called Bonneville on anything. So, yes, if somebody wanted to do that, I think they should be free to take the consequences. There's nothing in the Constitution about botulism. It's been interpreted in, and that's why we're in the mess we're in today.
All right, you're leading a protest against a different government program this week.
That's correct. The original Tea Party organization, or OTPO, believes that this current occupant of the White House and announcing a big new program for the space agency has, he's inadvertently tipped his hand.
And in fact, you're holding an anti-space program rally near Cape Canaveral this coming Wednesday?
Yes, sir. It's the Houston We Have a Problem Day, and we hope to be able to claim that thousands of people showed up to demonstrate that we're tired of having our tax dollars stolen to pay for programs that the founders of this country would never have approved. You can't imagine Thomas Jefferson calling for a program to build a vehicle to visit an asteroid, any more than you can imagine God waking up one morning and saying, oh, I have to bestow some new rights on mankind. I totally forgot about the gays.
So you think because the words outer space aren't mentioned in the Constitution...
Exactly. And so we'll be having some excellent speakers. Bristol Palin has indicated conceptual willingness to attend. And since Florida's an open carry state, we'll be bringing plenty of firearms.
You said earlier you thought the administration is tipping his hand when the president announced a new direction for the space program, mm-hmm. away from moon landing.
Mm-hmm.
What exactly did you mean?
Did any of you folks in your editorial meetings ever ask yourselves, why does this so-called president suddenly decide the moon is off limits? The Chinese are going there. The Indians are going there. What doesn't he want Americans to find on the moon? Now, I don't think any of us knows for sure, but could it be the ancestral home of the so-called Obama family? I personally can't think of another reason
You're suggesting that President Obama was not born on this planet?
No. No, see, the difference between Tea Party people and media folks like you is that I am open to the possibility of seeing things a different way. That doesn't mean I've closed my mind to the possibility that he could have been born on this planet.
Mm-hmm.
But up to and including this very moment, none of us, including you people, have seen any proof that he was born on this planet. Or if so, you've been deliberately withholding it for some reason, maybe just to keep the subject of his planetary home from even entering the conversation, which is interesting.
You think there's evidence of his ancestry on the lunar surface that could be found by astronauts?
That's a trick question. Maybe on the surface, maybe buried under the dust. I am not an astrophysicist. I'm just a taxpayer who's tired of being lied to.
Finally, Mr. Claypool, some Tea Party organizations have had links to noted Republicans. Some groups have gotten funding from Freedom Works, which is headed by former House GOP Majority Leader Dick Armey.
All right, now look, if you're suggesting that the official Tea Party organization, or OPTO, is not profoundly grass-rooted, you just may be putting a target on your own back. Let me say this. Any group of patriots that needs a Dick Armey behind them won't have me standing in front of them.
James Claypool from the original Tea Party organization.
Or OTPO.
Or OPTO. Thanks for getting us up to here. We had help today from the Center for Priorities. Let's get started. And from the Corn Syrup Foundation. Corn syrup, it's what's for life. I'm Milton Getzler. Join us next time we get you up to speed, up to the minute, up to here. This is CPR, Continental Public Radio.
And this is your local station again. Ladies and gentlemen, news of our friend Pakistan.
You remember them?
They didn't send A.Q. Khan to the nuclear nonproliferation meeting, either in Washington or in Tehran. Interesting. Deadline Lahore, don't get upset. Pakistan's government says now it will revive the criminal investigation into the murder or assassination of former Prime Minister Bhutto after a UN report came out this week blaming the former government of Pervez Musharraf for failing to provide adequate security for her.
Why would they do that? They just didn't have enough to go.
If it investigates vigorously, the fragile civilian government of President Zardari almost certainly would clash, says McClatchy newspapers, with the country's powerful military and with ISI, the Pakistani equivalent of the CIA, or better, and that could hinder Pakistani cooperation with the U.S. against al-Qaeda and the Taliban. The U.N. inquiry was released Thursday. It called for an investigation into the possible role of the military and the intelligence apparatus in Bhutto's assassination. It also disclosed that Pakistan's spy agencies had, quote,
severely hampered, unquote, the initial investigation. Severely hampered. Didn't just hamper it. Well, if you're going to hamper, be thorough. Sadari is Bhutto's widower. He's been criticized for supporting the UN inquiry. Now his government plans to use the recommendations of the report to revive a domestic criminal investigation. So, aides and aides to former General Musharraf angrily rejected the UN findings. Musharraf, a close ally of former President Bush, who sent billions of dollars of U.S. aid to Pakistan. Musharraf's official probe blamed jihadists for Bhutto's murder, an assessment shared by the Bush administration. The ISI has long-standing links with jihadist groups, including the Taliban. But that, don't worry about that. That has nothing to do with anything. These are our friends. Why would... The Director General of Military Intelligence at the time of the assassination ordered the scene to be hosed down immediately, a cleanup that destroyed invaluable evidence, according to an unnamed source quoted in the UN report. The guy who says, hey, they hosed it down and that destroyed evidence, is so scared he won't allow himself to be named. The UN report didn't name Bhutto's killers, but went much further than anyone had expected in criticizing the Musharraf regime and the military. Pakistan has been ruled by the military for about half its existence. But not now. But wait a couple of days. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the sound you hear is the sound of hearts and minds being won. In just next door, in a region we were originally taught to refer to as AFPAC. But it's not AFPAC anymore. It's just AF. Afghanistan, Dayline Kabul, U.S. troops raked a large passenger bus with gunfire near Kandahar early this week, killing and wounding civilians. Hearts and minds. And igniting angry anti-American demonstrations in a city where winning over Afghan support is pivotal to the war effort. The shooting killed as many as 5 civilians and wounded 18, occurred on the eve of the most important offensive of the war. In coming weeks, thousands of U.S., NATO, and Afghan troops are expected to try and take control of Kandahar. Flowers, you think? Or exploding cigars to greet them. It was the latest case in which NATO or U.S. forces fired on and killed civilians near a checkpoint or military convoy because they were perceived to be coming too close or fast. General McChrystal, the commander in Afghanistan of NATO and American forces, has made reducing civilian casualties a priority. Good work, babe. Sir, they have gone down over the past year, but checkpoint and convoy shootings have not declined. And commanders believe such killings are turning Afghans against foreign forces. Yeah, it's a belief. Why would you believe that? What proof do you have that Afghanis would be? McChrystal also has something else to say on the subject of what's going on there. He says the coalition, are there still other countries there? The coalition depends too much on private sector contractors. Now, he tells us. He says, insists his forces are keeping close watch on the flow of Taliban fighters who are training in Iran. Coalition has become too dependent on private contractors, he said during a 4-day visit to France. I think we've gone too far. I actually think we would be better to reduce the number of contractors involved. Alternatives could include increasing the number of troops, if necessary, or, and here's the good idea of the week, or using a greater number of Afghan contractors. Let's just examine that one for a minute. Would they be, A, more competent than American contractors? B, less corrupt than America? Wow. Either conclusion. Or taller than American contractors. McChrystal said the use of contractors was founded upon good intentions, such as limiting military commitments or saving money. Yeah, those are good intentions when you're fighting a war. I think it doesn't save money, though, he said. We have created in ourselves a dependency on contractors that I think is greater than it ought to be. He didn't specify where any cuts might come. As of September, according to Congressional Research Service, more than 11,400 private security contractors were in Afghanistan. 94% were armed. 90% were Afghans. So they're already Afghan contractors. They're just working for Americans. Now we could, with the thing, They carry out security for diplomats, advisory roles, and missionary work. Mercenary work. McChrystal also pointed indications some Taliban fighters have had training in Iran. And some weapons and ammunition have come across Iran's border with Afghanistan. Isn't it nutty? The Iranians are messing around in the two wars we're having on their borders? What could they be thinking? Thinking about AFPAC. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
On a related subject. In a dusty Afghan village where two U.S. troops killed two pregnant women and three other innocent civilians in February, Vice Admiral William McRaven, the commander of Joint Special Operations Command, showed up with two sheep and surrendered himself. He didn't literally surrender, but in the code followed by southeastern Afghanistan and the family so devastated in the incident, offering two sheep is the equivalent of begging for forgiveness. The father, who has lost two sons, two daughters, and one grandchild, accepted McRaven's apology, according to family members. "I am the commander of the soldiers who accidentally killed your loved ones," he told the family. "I came here today to send my condolences to you and to your family and your friends. I also came today to ask your forgiveness for these terrible tragedies," unquote. Presenting sheep is such a powerful form of requesting forgiveness that the father is now obligated not to take revenge, although he has told reporters previously he wanted to become a suicide bomber. McChrystal ordered McRaven to go to the village, according to a U.S. military official. And McRaven asked for the forgiveness one day after Afghan investigators presented their findings of the incident to General McChrystal. The family only asked McRaven to hand over whoever gave him his intelligence that led to the attack on their home. "You don't have to give him to us. Just hand him over to the Afghan government." "They'll hand him over to us." Use the middleman, babe. That's what it's for. Less than a week after its unveiling, Microsoft's new Kin mobile phone project found itself in the middle of a bit of a controversy when Consumer Reports and others pointed out that a portion of one of its promotional videos looked a lot like an endorsement of sexting, the practice of sending explicit photos and text messages. Microsoft is targeting the phones to teenagers and 20-somethings. In a tweet, the company's online safety team apologized and said the inappropriate portion of the video had been removed. The video includes a creepy, according to Consumer Reports, a creepy sequence in which a young man is shown putting a kin under his shirt and apparently snapping a picture of one of his naked breasts. Creeped out Consumer Reports, huh? Representative Pedro Colon, Democrat of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, apologized this week for comments he made about a grieving GOP colleague during a strange early morning floor debate. His comments came as Representative Jeff Wood of Chippewa Falls failed in can't even get through that. The Reverend Michael... No, it's just too complex a story for me to get my little mind around. The Reverend Michael Flieger has been called out for his fiery rhetoric plenty of times, but now he's issued an apology for a comment that may seem comparatively tame, saying priests should be allowed to marry and women should be allowed to become priests. Flieger made the comments in a sermon at his church this past week, a soundbite from which was posted on YouTube. He was preaching a sermon on the power of fear and had been talking about the fear that paralyzed the apostles and locked them in a room. "Only John at the foot of the cross and the women," Flieger said, summoning his story. "That's why there should be women priests. That's why there should be married priests. That's why there should be women bishops and women cardinals," unquote. His remarks were met with applause in his congregation, but in his statement of apology, published on the homepage of the Archdiocese, Flieger conceded that his sermon violated church teachings. "While this is my personal opinion, I do respect and follow the Catholic Church teachings, and I am sorry I failed to do this," he wrote in the signed statement. You're commenting. The province of Nova Scotia has apologized and pardoned the late Viola Desmond, a black woman who was jailed and fined in 1946 for sitting in the whites-only part of a New Glasgow movie theater. This is in Canada, ladies and gentlemen. Tolerant, liberal Canada. 1946. This closes an erroneous chapter in the history of this province and allows a new one to begin, says Lieutenant Governor Marianne Francis. I am confident that the case of Mrs. Viola Desmond will be the focus of scholarly and human rights research for years to come. It is an historic moment for Nova Scotia and for Canada, and I am proud to be a part of it. This is the first time a free pardon was posthumously granted in Canada. Really? What you been doing up to now? Oh, just convicting the guilty. All right, then. If you believe that. A free pardon admits a conviction was an error and the government said is an extraordinary remedy. Desmond was 32 when her car broke down in New Glasgow. They need a new one? During a trip to Sydney, she went to the movie theater to pass the time. Until her car was fixed, she accidentally sat in the wrong area and the police were called. She spent the night in jail and was fined $20, Canadian, and the theater's $6 court costs after she was convicted of defrauding the province of a penny in tax, which was the cost difference between the tickets of the two sections. Canada. Deadline Sarajevo. Croatia's president apologized this week for his country's role in the Bosnian War, the clearest message of reconciliation to date from any leader of the three nationalities involved in Europe's bloodiest conflict since World War II. Bosnia's president in turn praised relations with Croatia, remarks that starkly contrasted with his harsh criticism of Serbia the day before. So, yay, Croatia. Boo, Serbia, according to Bosnia. Assemblyman Ty Cobb, not the one you've heard of, Republican of Reno, apologized this week after motorists witnessed him kicking to pieces a campaign sign belonging to an assemblywoman from Reno. He's running for the state Senate. Said he was goofing around on Friday night after leaving the Nevada Bighorns Unlimited dinner with friends when he destroyed the sign on the corner of a couple of streets. The motorist said he stopped at the intersection when he saw Cobb get out of the passenger side of the car, walk up, and start kicking the sign. He admitted to the incident and offered to pay the other candidate for the sign because he was just goofing around. Like the other Ty Cobb, the two legislators are polar opposites politically. Hence the kicking. Hence the goofing. The Delaware Division of Motor Vehicles has apologized to a 16-year-old Arab American who was told to remove her Islamic headscarf before the agency would take her driver's license picture. Muslim women are allowed to wear the scarves, known as hijab, in their driver's license pictures as long as they do not cover their faces, said the DMV director. We called her and apologized profusely. This could have been handled with a little more sensitivity on our part, said the director. Following up last week, less than 2 days after an investigation found USA swimming coaches had molested, fondled, and abused dozens of young swimmers, USA Swimming apologized in a letter sent to its 12,000 coaches across the country. USA Swimming Executive Director Chuck Wilgus said he is extremely sorry if our organization has not done enough to provide the highest level of child protection safeguards and guidelines. The organization is working to establish an anonymous reporting hotline. Thinking about having a meeting to, so that victims who may be frightened can report any sexual abuse and have the information relayed to police once we figure out how to set up a hotline. Also being considered is the implementation of a blacklist in which USA Swimming would publish the names of individuals who have been banned for life from USA Swimming for sexual misconduct in order to prevent them from floating ever again. But I'm extremely sorry if, one point down, Dateline Staten Island, New York, Buffalo businessman Carl Palladino says he won't abandon his run for New York governor despite recent revelations that he circulated several racist and pornographic emails. I am not a quitter, and I'm certainly not a racist, he said at a candidate forum. The emails surfaced earlier this week. They include a bestiality video, a clip of African tribesmen dancing titled Obama Inauguration Rehearsal, and a fake motivational poster that uses the N-word to a group of black men to refer to a group of black men fleeing the propellers of a plane. Yes, I never claimed to be perfect. I apologize to anyone who's offended by the public revelation of those private emails. That activity is not Carl Palladino. It's not the man standing in front of you today, he said, the upstate millionaire. You better get that identity theft insurance then, sir. And Icelandic tycoon Björgólfur Thor Björgólfsson apologized to all Icelanders for his part in the asset and debt bubble which led to the collapse of the Icelandic banking system in October 2008 in a letter published this week. I apologize for my complacency towards the warning signs that were piling up. I apologize for not having followed my hunch when I did spot the danger. I apologize to you all, Björgolfsson wrote. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. This is Le Show. And now, ladies and gentlemen.
He's not a general.
That was slick.
He commands no troops.
He's not an inspector.
He peeks at no stoops.
He's an
inspector general.
Oh, yeah, news of the inspectors general. The U.S. government is not fully guarding against the contamination of meat by traces of antibiotics, pesticides, or heavy metals, says the new U.S. Department of Agriculture's inspector general. Federal agencies have failed to set limits on many potentially harmful chemical residues, which has resulted, quote, in meat with these substances being distributed in commerce, when it comes, unquote. And when it comes to pesticide traces, only one type is tested for, according to the report. There are also no set limits for some heavy metals,
like Copper or Aussie. And the Securities and Exchange Commission was aware beginning in 1997 that RLN Stanford was probably operating a Ponzi scheme, but took 8 years to do anything about it because complex investigations were discouraged by the agency, according to the Securities and Exchange Commission's Inspector General, who issued a scathing 159-page report revealing that over the better part of a decade, the SEC's Fort Worth, Texas office conducted four investigations and found that in each case the company's certificate of deposits couldn't be legitimate and were likely fraudulent, a Ponzi scheme or a similar scam. Top investigators told the Inspector General that a federal probe of such a novel and complex case was discouraged by the agency. News of Inspectors General, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And just before we go, the news from outside the bubble, Al Gore has come under criticism. According to the Independent of London, in news from outside the bubble, his environmental organization has taken money to raise awareness about the need for clean water from Dow Chemical, a company involved in the aftermath of one of the world's worst pollution disasters in Bhopal, India. More about that probably next week, because that's it for this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USEN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.41 megahertz shortwave. On the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet, on your computer at two different locations, live and archived, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. Available on your smartphone through Stitcher.com, available as a free download to members at audible.com/the show, and available as a free podcast at kcrw.com, although you won't solve the rebus that way. And it'll be just like getting that moment back if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Artie, thank you very much. Uh-huh. The show chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago in exile, and Hawaii desks. Thanks as always to Pam Halstead. The email address for this broadcast and the playlist of the music heard here on available at harryshearer.com. This program is on Twitter at LeTwits. Come join us. It's not like Facebook. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.